Happy Wednesday. Well, I guess if you're listening to this, it's not Wednesday. See, that's the crap that I'm trying to learn when I do a podcast is like not talking in the moment. It's April 17th, 2024.
Two
Hammer
days
and
after
ace.
Boston.
Hammer and ace, 2 days after Boston. Matt, you did your hair. You look too nice.
Didn't do my hair. I haven't showered in 24 hours.
24.
And I've
Have you
done two
run in the
workouts.
last 24 hours?
I have run twice in the past 24 hours. Yeah, I know I'm gross.
Two runs, no showering, poor Vika.
Yeah. No, yeah,
Jesus.
definitely pour her. Yeah.
She's not coming. She put a tape measure between you and her in the last 24 hours.
Well, she actually has to shower. She actually has a normal job. I don't. I get a fun job. I can be grimy for a week straight.
Nice. Can you hear me all right? I got a new mic.
Yeah, I need to work on that too. I'm using my phone right now because I think it's just going to be better
Oh, it
until we
sounds
get.
fine.
Okay, all good.
All right, let's review your 1 mile race. How'd it go?
I mean, so I've kind of had like this little hip issue going on for about a week now, and I was a little concerned about that. But I had a kind of rough, I think the last podcast we did, I said I had a rough Monday workout before the Friday race. But I did some shakeout runs all week, just kind of got everything in line. Woke up Friday morning, did a shakeout run, and by the time the race was starting, I felt like I'm ready to go. Like I think I'm ready to run anywhere between 4:40 and 4:44, which is kind of what I slightly have been training for. But the issue is, and I'm sure you had it over there in Wilmington, we had the craziest windstorm for 2 straight days. And I felt bad for this race because last year, same situation, 35 mile an hour winds, leading sideways rain. Same thing happened this year. Just a massive wind tunnel that's just circulating between all the buildings in downtown Columbia. So we get there, and I kind of knew like it might not be a fast race just because of the weather conditions. And there was only probably like 15 elite athletes in the race. So did our warm up. Vika decided she was going to race too, so she towed the line. She ended up actually getting second female, took home some bacon. But anyhow,
Nice.
the race was about to start, and they were trying to start it on time, but the timers were having some issues, which I don't blame them because like their antenna tripods were falling over. The actual barricades, the start finish line barricades, fell over. Luckily, nobody was in the
Does
area
everybody
before the
see how
start.
Matt's setting you up for him not running well?
No, come on. I actually ran well. I ran well. I just didn't run as fast as I wanted to. So just let me tell my story. And so the barricades fell over, and I'm like, they're going to cancel. I thought they were going to cancel it last year because the weather was so bad. I'm like, they're probably going to cancel it this year. So they removed the barricades, and they just basically had us lining up in the road. So here's the start line, and race is about to start. Massive tailwind. We're like, start the race now, start the race now. And he's like, no, we got to wait. We have to wait. The timers aren't ready. And so as soon as the timers gave him the thumbs up, the wind literally shifted and came right at our face. So we
Nice.
started the race, wind in the face. I was probably in fifth place early. My goal was 69.70. I went through the first 469. My second 400, I was trying to not slow down, but just kind of ease off the. You kind of want to run, you can't really run negative splits in a mile. You got to run fairly even, if not a slightly faster, in my opinion,
Yeah.
slightly faster the first, 400 to 800. So first 400 was 69, second 400 was 68. Somehow I got faster to the turnaround, and I moved up into fourth. So it's 800 meters out, 800 meters back, downtown Columbia. Right at the 800 meter mark, I could see the clock, and it was like 2:15, 2:16. I looked at my watch, I'm like, yep. Hit the turnaround right at 2:17. I'm like, man, I'm feeling pretty good to be running, 4:34 pace. And as soon as I got to the turnaround, the guy in front of me, he was sitting in third at the time. He just kind of slowed into the turnaround. I'm like, dude, like I'm hitting this thing and going. So I actually passed him, moved into third, held on to that for the next 600 meters. Felt pretty good. It's kind of deceiving when you're looking at an 800 meter straight. You can almost like once you get about 600 meters out, you can kind of see the finish line, but it's deceivingly further away than you think.
Yeah, it looks closer than it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, did you ever run at Terre Haute for NCAAs or pre-Nats?
Yes.
Same situation. You can see their massive finish line 1,000 meters away, and you're like, I'm so close. You are 3 minutes away. It stinks.
Yeah.
So same situation. I could see it, but I just couldn't get to it. And with about 200 meters to go, I could just feel like, man, you have not raced in 2 years. And I dinosaur zombie walked it in, basically.
Hey, man.
My last 400 was 1:21. Yeah, really
well,
rough.
For most people, that's fast. But
haven't raced in a while. Ended up, my first 12 was great. I felt like I competed well. Felt like as soon as the race was over, I had a massive splitting headache and I could taste the blood in the back of my throat. But I had fun with
all
it.
The greatest feelings of running.
I know it is. Yeah. And I'm hoping I could toe the line again. I'm going to do the Downville Mile, which is our fast mile here in Greenville.
Nice.
So nice. I finished fifth. So out of the money, I stunk.
There you go. Hey, man. I mean, you went out in 2:15, 4:30 pace, and you finished at 5:20. It's nothing like dying in a mile. So it's all good.
All good. Yep. How'd your 5K go?
Yeah, you know it. I was really happy. I did find out later that it was probably was not a certified course. It was a little short, but my Garmin read 4:55s. You know, for my overall pace. I went into it on kind of a medium mileage week. I ran a workout Wednesday before the race was Saturday. I got in 12 and then the next day did doubles. So I didn't have a low mileage week, nor was I rested, but it was like a beautiful morning. It was windy, just like it's been on the East Coast all weekend, but it was like 52 and there was no humidity. So it was just one of those nice mornings. So I felt good, cool, crisp, warmed up. I actually had a chance to warm up for a race. A lot of times I'm like scrambling to set stuff up and then I just go jump in, which isn't ideal. But I knew there wasn't a lot of competition, which there wasn't. And I know the lead biker. So I said, Dave, can you just ride at 12.2 to 12.3 miles an hour? Just do your best to ride that. He goes, yeah, man, I got you. So we went out and I felt very good. And I couldn't tell if he was riding at 12.2 and 12.3 because he was just cruising ahead of me. But I don't like to make a lot of hand signals or anything like that. And, you know, then at about a quarter mile, he was like 12.3, 12.4. I'm like, oh, damn. Okay. All right. I'm good. So this race starts out, it's the same course. It's been around for, I don't know, more than a decade. It's a course in a mall called Mayfair and it's all the same. You go around a bunch of roundabouts and then you got to go to a hairpin turnaround at before the mile marker. So of course, not ideal, right? So you have to stop, turn around and come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I went through the mile, looked at my watch, 4:53. So it's like, nice. Okay. So I was good. I felt good. Mile two, I felt surprisingly really good. I was breathing hard and there was a side / headwind. And I was about 9:45 at the 2 mile. So, you know, holding strong, you know, about 4:52 to 4:54 pace. Then we turn left and go right into the wind on a snaky road that like turns right, then turns left, then turns right, zero cars on the road. And you got to run the tangents to another roundabout, basically out and back. It's my least favorite part of that whole course. I'd rather do that at the beginning, to be honest with you. So, you know, you're on like a very tight roundabout, then you come back. And of course the wind was at my back. And I knew I slowed down at that portion because Dave didn't really react with his bike, but I think he was hovering. He was like 11.8, 11.9, 12. So I was now running 5 to 5:10 pace and, you know, into the wind, you know, down that stretch. Then turned it around, was able to come back to 4:50 pace, turned right at another roundabout. That's just the way this course flows. And then you run down the final stretch. before a hairpin left turn to the finish line because they can't put the finish line on the main stretch. So I couldn't see the clock or anything. I just saw, I knew where I was going to turn. And when my 3 mile split went off, you know, I was, the 3 mile split was very close to 1430, 1428, you know? So I was like, I'm going to do a 32, you know? So I just did everything I could to pump my arms and finished in 1502.8. And so it was, I would call it a master's PR, but you know, I was hurting for sure. But if I would have known, I think earlier, if I would have like had the inclination to look at my watch, which I didn't, but there was, and there was really nobody out there saying, you know, hey, if you do this, you'll get it. So it went good. You know, I was really happy. It gave me some confidence. Then had a solid workout. Run the next day, 18 miles the next day. But I am still dealing with a little bit of like that mid groin, like when I, only when I sit. So I got to be real careful because I got about 4 weeks of training left for before the Bayshore Marathon in Traverse City. So
it's on the inside, that little, that pain.
Yeah, man. It's just the same area I had back in 2020, but it's not, it doesn't present itself the same, but you know, like it, there's like a difference between running through little, something little, and obviously recognizing that, hey, I need to keep, I got to keep tabs on this. And then running through like utter pain. Like I don't feel it when I run. I feel it when I'm rested and sitting. So I went to Umpstead Park yesterday for anybody who is familiar with Raleigh, North Carolina. It was in Umpstead, and we were running five by the dam hill from the dam to the gate. And you know, before we get into Boston here, I watched the end of Boston and I watched Helen O'Beery. You know, did you see her arms at the end of the race?
I tracked our local runners and that's it. Oh. Did not tune in. So yeah,
I watched it. And if you watched the race and watched her run, her arms were just gigantic at the end, not in size, but how she was pumping them at the end of the race. You know, she's already got a big stride and she already has, you know, kind of a big arm swing. But when she made a move and started pumping, I mean, she really picked the pace up and she really spent a lot of energy pumping her arms. And I don't know anything about her training, but I'll bet you that's something she goes to in her training to really, you know, feel strong and feel fast and make her move. So when I was doing these hills yesterday at a hill workout, you know, I was trying to progress the hill, you know, so each 800 meter hill was going to get faster. So the last two, I'm like, I'm going to just pump my arms like Helen O'Beery. And dude, I ran the last two the fastest. I mean, it's hard. And I like that workout. Huh?
Go ahead. I said, I like that work. That it's like you did a bunch of, you even said 2 weeks ago, you did some 800 meter repeats at like 222. And that's like the one workout I never really, and that's how I felt about the mile. At least I never really got into, you know, I did either longer stuff or really short stuff. I really don't like, I don't know if I'm not good at it or I just don't, I didn't have any training partners. It's really hard to get into those intermediate kind of workouts, I guess.
They suck, dude.
They hurt. And that's why I wasn't used to the last 200 meters of my mile. I'm like, oh, I have not felt like this in training at all. And this is probably why I'm sucking.
Yeah. And you know, and that's the thing. And you know, when you are going to race 5K or even the marathon, if you don't put yourself through the grueling intervals that really put the icing on the cake, in that last 6 to 8 weeks, I mean, you can't expect it to come out in a race. You can't expect a result to come out in a race when you haven't actually done it in training. And so like, it's crazy to think that when you're tired and when you're suffering, what do you have to do? You have to pump your arms more. You have to create a bigger movement and create a more intense movement in order for your legs to follow suit. Because, well, geez, if you keep your arms nice and calm at the side, are you saving energy? Well, maybe, but are your legs also not following suit? Are you not getting that full body your reaction forces from top to bottom? And so, you know, it's really something that you got to practice. And I think when people, especially the young kids, like when they're finishing an interval, even I was at Josh Esip's practice last night in Raleigh over the triangle practice, and they were doing 8 400s at mile, like at mile pace. Most of them were doing 8 400s at mile pace. And, you know, when they got to the end, I'm yelling, go to your arms, go to your arms. And the kids pump their arms. And that like creates this, you know, force reaction to their legs, and their legs automatically are going to go. I don't know. It was just an interesting, just something that kind of came to me when I was watching Boston and watched Helen O'Beery like go to her arms in such a long race with like 10K to go or 8K to go. And she was able to sustain it and hold it, which is absolutely incredible. Yeah. You know, 2-time Boston winner.
The opposite side of that, the men's winner, they showed a video of him for like two or three times. He was shaking his arms out. And they were just, some doctor was discussing, because of his, he has a very minimal arm swing, and the way he kind of almost rolls his shoulder back, the doctor was saying he actually probably was pinching some blood flow to his arm. So his arms were probably going numb at the tail end of the marathon. So that's why he kept shaking his arms out, because he was pinching all blood flow. So he had a very, just a very tight arm swing
close to the body
that might not have been helping him. Yeah.
That dude took it out. You know, for anybody, you know, who watched Boston, that dude took it out from the beginning and led the race, got a 2.5 minute lead. And then, you know, the guys chasing him, they just waited too long. They ran out of real estate, but I don't think, you know, he looked strong. But do you know the story behind him? For people who run marathon, you know, for runners who are into the marathon, and they put all their eggs in that one Boston basket or marathon basket. The marathon is such a crapshoot when it comes to, you're putting in all this training, all this investment. You go to the Boston Marathon, it's an amazing race, and what do you get? Warm temperatures, a vacuum for a wind. Basically, a vacuum meaning that the tailwind wasn't anything that was really going to help you, but it didn't really.
And not cooling you, like Collins.
It's not cooling you, you know? And you don't get the performance there that you really wanted. But, you know, if you look at Sissy Lema, he ran it in 2021, DNF'd. He ran it in 2022, DNF'd. And he ran it in 2023 and got 30th. And the dude's a 201 to 203 marathoner. Mm-hmm. And he won this year in 206. And that just goes to show, you know, like, the marathon, you can get all these, you can be in the best shape of your life, and you can go and do the race, and on paper you might not get your result that you want, but you got to kind of readjust, and you have to believe in yourself and keep trying and not necessarily change too much of your training. Maybe make small adjustments, but don't make major adjustments and say, oh my God, I'm out of shape. I went and did the marathon and I'm out of shape. You know, race beforehand, get some good results from your training so you know that you're in shape. But then realize too that even out of 4 marathons, you know, he prevailed, and it was all worth it in the end, you know. And I think that's just a good lesson for anybody who continuously goes to Boston, or you're on this journey of a marathon PR and you want to get it somewhere. And, you know, look, you know, you're always toying with the conditions, right? You're risking anytime you buy a plane ticket to go to a location, you're risking what the weather's going to be. And you can't go, and you can't be disappointed. I mean, the weather's the weather. If you go into the race, right, Matt, if you go into a race preemptively saying the weather's bad, I'm already not going to run good, I mean, you've already lost.
Yeah.
The ability.
I just knew I wanted to compete. I do. I will say, and kind of going to your point about like sticking to your, like if you train a certain way, you should probably race that a certain way. I knew going into this that my mileage has been low, just because I am purposely keeping it low so I can stay healthy. And the paces, you know, when I'm doing the shorter stuff, don't bother me at all. Like I'm in 56 second 400 shape. I really should have been more inclined to sticking to a slower first half of that mile. Like maybe, you know, even, going out in 222 to 223, and then trying to close faster. Cause I think I see the last podcast, I'm going to try to, you know, negatives or positive split this thing. That's kind of what you traditionally do. I just don't think that's what would suit my personal fitness right now, just because I do have a little bit more faith in my speed at the close end of a race. And the same thing for marathoners. There are marathoners out there that are just trying to hang on to that until that last 10K and try to use some of that speed. And then there's guys like Sesti who just says, you know what, I'm going to hammer this thing the first 10K, build up this 2-minute lead and see if it works. And it did.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about one of our athletes. We said on the Boston preview podcast that it's almost nearly impossible to negative split Boston. Was she negative splitted?
Yeah.
I think she listened to it and wanted to prove me wrong. Or maybe prove Colin wrong. Yeah. But her name's Casey Henry. I invited her on. I'm not sure she's going to join or not. But, you know, I talked to all of them, kind of what we talked about on the podcast. And then the temperature even went up further from the time we had our pre-race meetings to the end. And, you know, this was her first Boston Marathon. So she kind of went into it with the unknown. You know, when you go into Boston the first time, you don't really know what you're getting into. You don't know really how big the hills are unless you previewed them. You don't know how they're going to feel. You don't know what the crowds are going to be like or anything like that. But we talked on the phone yesterday, and I just I told her to tell me about her race because she negative splitted. She ran put it on my phone here. She ran she ran a 3:17, which was just about 5 minutes off of her personal best, which is a 3:13, which is her qualifying time. But she went through the half marathon in 1:38:48, which is about 1:17:40. And she ran, 3:17:40. She ran 3:17:05. So it was a very small negative split, but sure enough, it was a negative split, you know?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, what went through your head? How did you go through the race? Like, what did you do, you know, differently than what we discussed? And she's like, well, no, I did what we discussed, but I went out and I just kind of went with the crowd, you know, at the beginning, and I looked at my watch and I was 7:20 and I didn't want to start out at 7:20. So I right then readjusted and I just let everybody go and kind of got off to the side and slowed down to 7:40 to 50, you know, and I thought, well, that was really smart, you know, to be going downhill, first Boston Marathon, really took note of what we said. And she ended up slowing way down at the beginning. Yeah.
Her corral went out too fast, right? I mean,
yeah, and then her whole corral went out too fast. And people, and I talked to one of my other athletes, he didn't negative split, but he still had a pretty good race for Boston. And he goes, like, people were pissed at him for starting out too slow, like for his corral. They were like, get out of my way, you know? and all those people were walking on the hills, you know?
Yeah.
So this girl runs a seven, you know, in her first 5K, she was like 7:40, and she was 7:30 for the next 10K. And then she was 7:25 and then 7:15, and then hit the hills, went back to 7:30 to 7:50. Then on the backside of the hills, 7:10 to 20, 7:16 for that downhill 24.8, and then finished in 7:09s. I mean,
that's awesome. That's fun. That's so cool.
I said, what was going through your head when you got on the other side of heartbreak? She's like, Tom, honestly, I got up to heartbreak and I'm like, that was heartbreak. I was like, and she in the first 15 miles held back and purposely slowed down to pour water all over her head, take the hydration, take her nutrition. And she wasn't really there to like, I'm going to go get a PR. It was like, I want to enjoy this, but I want to just try to execute it good. And it's exactly what we just said. When the conditions when they look like they're not going to be favorable, right? That's maybe the best word, favorable for your best time. You kind of have to pivot and say, I just want to execute this good. And dude, it might come out to be one of your best times. It might come out to be close to a PR or just an impressive result. There's nothing wrong with an impressive result that's not a personal best. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I ran it, it was either 2018 or 19 was the year that we had a rainy 38 degree headwind. And it like, it snowed like the day before. It was like below freezing and it snowed for like an hour. And I went into that thinking the same thing. I'm like, these conditions, like it's not going to be great. And I wasn't, I was fitter than my qualifying time, but I wasn't going to try to run fast times. I'm like, all right, I think if I can run 250 this year. That'd be great. I would enjoy it. It'd be fine.
Right.
So we went out and same situation. The pace wasn't as concerning at the beginning for me and my corral, but a lot of people were shedding their clothes very, very early, even before we got to the start line, and people were standing there. I mean, it was 38 degrees, raining. The whole tent city at the beginning was covered in water. People were wearing bags over their shoes, which actually created more problems because they just, you know, everyone's feet were soaked. Everyone was freezing. I made sure to go to the local Goodwill, got a bunch of throwaway clothes, and I held on to them. Like I kept everything on for like probably the first 10K before I started ditching it. And I still had one rainproof, waterproof jacket. I'm like, I'm not going to take this off. I don't care if I start sweating underneath. People were shivering. The weather was the worst that year. And I'm like, I'm not fighting 26.2 miles. I know I can cover that. I'm pretty much fighting this wind, this rain, this cold. And it got to a lot of folks. And I think that was actually one of my better performances at Boston, simply because I was more prepared for the weather than I was the course.
And you didn't mentally let it get to you. And like, that's the same with this.
Yeah, I was very embraced on this. If you say it's going to suck and you allow it to suck in your mind, you're going to have the worst 26.2 mile. But I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to PR. But I also don't want to be out here for, you know, 4.5 hours. So I might as well run a good effort, run a smart effort, and make sure I'm prepared as soon as the gun goes off. And right. I think yeah. I enjoyed the suck.
It doesn't mean the PR is not possible still.
Yeah.
But at least you're giving yourself the chance to execute. Now, the other side of this is what Des Linden said about the entire sport has changed. Have you seen that comment? She said, when you go out the first mile, it's like 5:07 for the elite women, and you're in 23rd place. No one's afraid of the distance anymore. No one's afraid to attack the pace, and people don't really fall apart, blow up like they used to. The sport just feels really different. I think 2:28, when I was at the beginning of my career, you're looking at top 10, maybe top 7. It's great thing to see. It's just crazy having been on both sides of it. And it is. The more we learn about the marathon, the more we learn how to execute it, the more we have these conversations, the better we can coach it, the more opportunities there are out there. But she's right, you know, like people are becoming more resilient since. And it's, you know, look at CJ Albertson. Like the guy trains with red lamps around his treadmills so that he's in is 80 degrees. How many people do that? Probably 0.001% of the population. Maybe more people might do it now that they've seen him. But like he ran a 209. I mean that won Boston in the 70s. 209, 20. You know that was like the winning time. That was Greg Myers.
And he's coming off a marathon finish at the trials. I mean, he's fully recovered. I mean, it's hard to do two marathons in 2 and 3 months.
Yeah. You know, it's a popular distance. Everybody, you know, a lot of people want it. They want to execute a good marathon. I think it's fun. To me, it's like bowling. I want to bowl a 300.
Yeah. It is the best. You just feel like when you run a good marathon, you just feel like I'm dictating what my body's doing. And having that kind of control over your fitness feels so good. I mean, it really does.
It's the best if you can get into that last 10K and have a chance. If you get to the last 10K and you're bonking, you have no chance. Like you can turn it around in some way, but you have no chance. So what do you have to do to execute the first 20 miles so smart, not just in Boston, but any marathon, so that you can race the last 10K, like you said on the last podcast? What do you have to do to make that happen? And that's when the training comes in. That's where you and I can... You know, we do a little bit of trial and error over the years, but over 17, 18 years of coaching for me, I've got a lot of solutions on how to help people on that last 10K. Does it always work? No, because conditions are changed. But like, you know, you want to have the chance, you want to have the chance to feel the best, maybe not like effort wise, like you're still grinding and you're still feeling pain. But you want to have the chance to be able to race that last 10K and have the gears to run that last 10K. And that's hard to do. It's definitely hard to do. And sometimes it comes only on specific days, you know, but it's very rare that I've seen it happen where somebody tries to bank time in the marathon. It's pretty rare, just because maybe at the elite level, it's not as rare, but at the age group intermediate level, which is majority of the, you know, the marathoners out there, have to do it in a progressive style. Any other thoughts, my friend?
No. Yeah, we had a couple athletes run PRs at Boston, which is obviously really hard to do on that course in those conditions. So, you know, anybody that obviously all the finishers out there, congratulations. Yeah, are you going to go back next year? Have you qualified?
Every time I watch it, I think, man, you know, I could go back.
Yeah, Mika wants to go back.
It's great, dude. It's a great event. There was a couple conversations on the threads about, like, why does everybody keep doing Boston year after year after year after year and not go support your other marathons? Well, I don't think those people are not supporting other marathons. Of course, I'll plug the Wilmington Marathon to come run ours, but you can do both. You know, we talked about with some of my athletes, we talked about doing the double, and how that can help. Each marathon can help each other if you do it right, you know, and brings up a good point of why not go and do a January, February marathon while you're in the cycle after doing like maybe reverse type periodization where you try to go fast in the fall. And then in the January, February timeframe, you go, you do a marathon and then you go back to Boston, and Boston is your second marathon of the two. And I've had great experience with that myself, but I've also had great results, because if you do a marathon 8 to 10 weeks apart, or even 6 to 8 weeks, which might be tight, but you're in the marathon training cycle. So you're in that mode, you have the gears, you've been training hard, you're putting the miles in. The first marathon itself is a physical training run. It physically makes you better if you recover properly from it.
Yeah.
And then if you go into the next marathon with a short cycle, your likelihood of getting injured in between those two marathons, yes, there's some risk always, but it's less likely if you had like 12 to 16 weeks in between marathons, because now your training program has to extend longer and you don't really get a chance to do a strength phase, you know? So there is some good data out there on doing multiple marathons in a shorter period of time if you can recover and stay injury free. I mean,
My mode of thought has changed slightly, because I used to be like, all right, you know, 4 to 5 weeks out, let's try to find a half marathon to run. And that was kind of always my, like, all right, we got to have a half marathon before the marathon just to kind of get in a longer, harder.
I've gotten
effort.
Away from that.
Me too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So what I actually do now, instead of trying to go out and crush a half marathon, 5, 6 weeks, 4 weeks out, my mode of thought is trying to transition that, you know, I still like them to sign up for a half marathon just to kind of get that race feeling jitters out of the way. But I actually turn it into more of a training run where I'm having them do a extended warm-up, like a 6 to 8 mile warm-up, and then towing the line and trying to run marathon pace for a 13 mile. Because we have this, we have a Swamp Rabbit Trail. So if you do the Greenville half in February, it's like you can do an 8 mile warm-up to get to the start line, get into a corral that's close to your marathon pace, and then run your marathon pace for 13 miles, basically with a 1 foot of drop every mile all the way down to Greenville. That's kind of more of my train of thought with trying to do a harder, long, close to marathonish effort without crushing your legs. And with also without having to just toe the line for 13.1 fresh. And then it doesn't really simulate, the half marathon is half the distance. It doesn't simulate marathon training really at all. It's a completely different threshold.
Different race. You're toying around threshold, you know, for your top 10%, you're toying around threshold, and then, high zone 3, low zone 4, if you're not. And I mean, yeah, it's half the distance. So it's like the difference between running a 5K over a 10K. I mean, it's half the distance. Everything you go faster is faster, but, or shorter is faster. But I agree with you. If you go out and try to set a half marathon PR and rest and taper for it, you know, too close to a marathon, you are risking not having your legs for the marathon. And I've made that mistake several years ago where because what most people want to do is, well, I'm training for, let's just say Boston. I'm training for the Boston Marathon in April. So I'm going to go out and try to PR and a half in March. Well, if you don't get your PR in March, you lose confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where coaching can come into play, and you come up with a game plan, like you just said, where if you PR, it's a bonus. But if you're going to PR in a half, you need to be doing that PR on a lot of fatigue. Mm-hmm. And then you know you could probably have gone way faster in the half, but you should definitely not taper for that half. You know, and most likely though, PRing is not as important in the half as it is running a training like you described, where you put some preemptive miles on it. And I think I just lost Matt, but anyway, you put some preemptive miles on there on the run itself, and then there they come. And then you go into the actual half marathon. I lost you there for a second, but you go into the actual half marathon on a certain level of fatigue, and then you run that half marathon simulating a marathon workout. I think that is mm-hmm. a great approach. But also you could do that like what we did with a bunch of marathoners that were doing Wilmington. And what we do also with our battleship is we pick a couple races beforehand. Like we have a 5K, 10K combo race 2 weeks beforehand. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of their pace work in those two races. So you're in the race environment, but you're not technically going for necessarily your best times in both races. You're just using the races as being in the environment, getting the nerves up, rattling your body a little bit with the nerves, you know, doing all your pre-race nutrition, you know, going through the motions and shit. Look, if you PR in one of those two events or something beforehand, it's a great bonus. But you know, to wrap this up, Casey, our negative splitter just joined. Casey, are you on?
Yeah, I was going to see if this would work.
Yeah, she's on. So we'll cool. wrap it up with you. We did already talk about you a little bit, but we're just going to let you tell the our listeners about your experience on how you were able to do the inevitable negative splitting the Boston Marathon. You went out once again. She went out in a 1:38:48. And then finish with a 3:17:05, her second best marathon time.
Yeah, so I mean, I just had read and heard over and over again that you gotta just go out easy. The hills will get you. You know, you want to leave some in the tank because you can really crush it at the end if you have something left. So that was kind of my game plan. Was I'm gonna hold back. I put on the brakes that first three miles, especially the first three. You know, you're going on a slight downhill and you really just, I remember you telling me you got to feel like you're out for a jog, conversational pace, those first 3 miles, and hold back on the hill going downhill. So that's what I did. And then I just kind of broke it into segments. You know, the first three, I started at a 7:40 pace. The next three, I was like, okay with doing a 7:30. And then from there, dropped it to 7:20s until I got over the hills. And I took that hill section, never looked at my watch, just ran the hills the best I could, and then kicked it into gear afterwards. And I think I really prepared that first half of the race for the second half with nutrition and stuff. I was taking every Gatorade, every water station I was stopping, took my gels every 4 miles. I used the Morton gels and just kind of prepared my body for that last home stretch of last 5 or 6 miles.
How did it feel to be passing? How many people did you pass up the hills and at the end?
Oh, I was crushing it. No,
and I endless.
Felt great. it was mentally, it's awesome feeling when you're looking around and so many people are walking at the end and I'm able to drop my pace down to a 7 minute pace. And it felt great. I mean, it's definitely mentally pumps you up and you want to run that home stretch into down Boylston Street, just giving it all you got.
I think that's we all have to say, okay, as we get faster in the marathon, yeah, we have to take more risks. And we learn through the risks,
yeah.
But it sure as hell is pretty nice to have the mental capacity to have all this positive reinforcement at the end as you're passing people instead of the one being passed. And I've been in both boats. I've been walking at the end and gotten completely, reamed by the crowd. Come on, dude, let's go. You know, as thousands of hundreds of people are passing me. But yeah, it's humbling.
Yeah, that was my marathon experience 2 years ago when I, was going for my first BQ and ended up miserable walking at the end, seeing like blacking out. And, so I have said to myself, I will make sure that never happens again. That was awful. So
Casey,
I got to learn. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, I just have to learn now, like, okay, you don't want to have too much, like, you don't want to hold back too much. I want to still be able to do PR my races. I can't, I got to learn that I can start pushing it maybe a little sooner and just kind of find that sweet spot.
Yeah, I guess that was my question is like, or Tom was saying about risk, you got to risk it at some point. And you said earlier about, knowing that at the end of the race, you had enough in the tank to finish that last 10K, running much faster. I think that is the biggest issue we have as marathoners is you have to constantly be saying, how much do I have? Like at mile three, how much do I have left? At mile six, how much do I have left? Like, at what point am I okay with digging a little deeper in that tank so I have enough to get to the finish line? So for you, at what point did you feel like, all right, was it before the Newton Hills where you're like, you know what, I can just get through this, not even look at my watch, and I think I'm going to be fine for the last 6 miles? Like, at what point were you like willing to risk a little bit more to achieve your goal, not of PR, but just, like you did, crush the last 10K of the race?
Yeah, this was my first Boston, so I had heard about the hills and I was nervous about getting over the hills. So for me, it wasn't until I got past those hills, which looking like during the race, to me, they weren't as bad as I imagined. So I was unsure until I got past those hills. And then I was like, okay, I did it. I got past the hills. Now I can go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just, and I think knowing the course now and knowing that I can handle the hills, like I probably, if I did it again, would, I know I can push it a little sooner. But it's also, you never know with the heat, like I could have cramped up at any moment. Mm-hmm. So I got lucky in that regards.
Yeah. Well, congrats.
And that's the risk as you dial in Boston more. You look at these elite runners too, and they're taking risks much earlier. Like we said with Dez, she said that, how people are going out so fast now and they're not afraid to die. I use that term, not physically die, but like die in the race, die off the pace. But for you, you could very well go back to Boston and say, all right, well, I nailed it last time. This time I'm going to go out mile 14 and then trash yourself on the hills, and you could completely feel different at the end. That's the exact risk I think everybody who does multiple Bostons takes. And so, you see both sides of the puzzle, but there is commonality between most age group athletes who run Boston, who do it well. Rarely do you hear that they went out fast. Rarely. Yeah. I mean, it's just, so you look at percentage. I talk to people about why do football teams not run hurry up offense the entire game? Yeah. Hurry up offense can confuse the defense, but it can also throw an interception.
Yeah.
Or fumble easier. So, well, thanks, Casey. We appreciate your insight. Awesome race. Negative split Boston.
Thank you.
I've never done that. So props to you.
not many have.
Well, Tom, I remember you saying on the podcast last time, you said something about, I'm telling everybody, you gotta go out slow, you gotta go out slow. And you were like, and 90% of you still won't go out slow enough.
Yeah.
And I was thinking in my mind, I'm gonna prove him wrong.
I know, right, I told you, Matt. See?
I can do this.
I told you, she wanted, most people want to prove me wrong. I want to prove me wrong.
Yep. but it all worked out for me.
Yeah, great job. Enjoy the recovery time.
Thank you.
All right. Hammersmith, you got anything else?
Nope, that's it. Let's do it again next week. We'll talk about, I don't know, my next mile adventure.
Your next
When's
mile?
Your
let's
marathon?
Have you do it all. Let's have you do your next ultra adventure.
I'm not
Go
doing
from the mile to the
doing,
ultra.
I'm not doing ultras. I've already said I got, you know, I enjoy running fast, and I am going to get a little. I just, you know, 25 miles a week. Haven't raced in 2 years. I'm just slowly trying to enjoy this thing again.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what it is. You know, you got to keep going out there and staying somewhat fit, and then when you're ready to turn the switch on, you know,
you have
the ability to do so. And I think that's the name of the game with this sport is staying healthy, consistent, long periods of time. And then we go into our next year saying, okay, what do we do? And then like for us, as we get older, what's our renewed goals for our age groups? You know, as we age up.
I'm getting on the track at 40. I'm getting on the track at 40.
All right. I love it. Try to run.
Let's do a four. We'll do a 4x8 team at USATF at a
That'd
Masters.
That'd be sweet. Dude, I need to get back on. I want to do a track 5K, track 2 mile. I love that crap, man. It's so fun.
I want to do a track 800. I want to run 204, 205.
Yeah. I want to break two again. I was just telling an athlete of mine, like, if you really want to overcome nerves in any race, run track.
Everybody can see every little insecurity you have can be seen on a track.
It is, dude. If I line up for a mile tomorrow, even if I was the only one on the track,
if I was a solo miler,
I'd be like my stomach would be up in my throat because it's a mile all out. You know it's gonna hurt. It's four laps. You get to lap three and you're like telling you all these nasty conversations start going through your head, like this sucks, this is terrible. Oh my god, damn it, this is terrible, you know. But it's just a great sport in that. That's why we do these mini track meets in the summertime. It just gets people way out of their comfort zone. When you do it, then you jump back into a road 5K, the level of anxiety that you have in those other races just tones it down compared to track. That's what I love about track. But then you get kids on the track and they don't give me, they're just like, yeah,
they
whatever.
Don't care. Let's do it. They'll run all out. And on 1 mile race, they'll run all out for the first 300 meters and then just suffer.
They thrive on it. It's great.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week.
All right.
Take care.
See you guys. Bye-bye. See ya.